When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right. Well, before we get started with our annual SEMA show, where Matt, the moderator, good Matt, roams around the floor and talks to lots of interesting people in the automotive field. We'll get to that in a second. First, we'll get to betonline.ag. NFL, college football, plus NBA action. Visit betonline.ag. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Matchups in week 11. Are we in week 11 already? What the hell's going on? Where'd it go? Where's this? The season slipping through my fingers like the Rams. Steelers, Browns, Patriots, Eagles. Well, it'll be a good game. Cardinals at 49ers, Falcons, Panthers as well. We've got $500 in rewards to give out each week to five listeners and $5,000 in a season-long charity contest. Join the conversation on Twitter at hashtag SportsNetChallenge. My pick, New England at Philly. Here's my lock, New England at Philly, 35-21. Use the promo code PODCAST1, get a 50% sign-up bonus. Today, betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. A choice, but on a mandate. Get it on, and let's continue with the hot SEMA talk. We'll throw it to Matt. Matt's talking to the good people from Recaro.
All right, we're in the Recaro booth. I'm here with Jim Kelzer. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing fine. And yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. It's been off to a very busy SEMA show already. Your booth is very popular. You got some new products here at Recaro. I think everybody listening is pretty familiar with Recaro. You know, it seems like Recaro seats are becoming more and more either as a factory option or just the factory seats in so many cars now. I was just here in Vegas last week and driving the new Shelby GT500s, and everyone we drove had Recaro seats in them.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, quickly, just the background of Recaro. It's been around for quite some time now.
So it celebrated its 113th birthday October 1st of this year. And the gentleman that started it, his name is Wilhelm Reuter in Germany, outside of Stuttgart. He was an expert in creating chassis for horse-drawn carriages and then got into the mobile vehicles as they started to grow. 1906 was the starting point. He ended up partnering up with a guy by the name of Ferdinand Porsche.
Yeah.
And that relationship lasted for many, many, many years. 1963, he sold the company. He got out of the body business, turned it over to Porsche. Porsche took over the manufacturing facility in Stuttgart. Then Mr. Reuter went into seats. His first and foremost passion was to create seats that could mold to the individual, that the individual could put in tracks, recliners, move the seat around.
Yeah.
And all of the designs were around form follows the human body. So rather than starting from the outside of the seat and working into the occupant, he reversed that. Safety was number one, comfort, and then also the ability to travel long distances without fatiguing the driver. So
Recaro is you know, for us and for people that are familiar with, you know, listen to CarCast, they know Recaro as a performance seat, usually a performance upgrade, in our cars and high performance vehicles. But Recaro has a huge business of everything from bus seats and airplanes, and the aftermarket business is probably just a small tiny fraction of the overall company.
So there's three main markets that we're in right now. Number one is OEM. So you go to Ford, Mustang, and you can have the Recaro upgrade in the seats. General Motors, you can get Camaro. Cadillac have branded Recaro seats in them. The second market is, and you mentioned it, commercial vehicle. So you have transit authorities. The duty cycle on these buses are 8 hours and then off 1 hour, and then another driver comes in for 8 hours. The life cycle is 12 years. So we had to create an answer to that. And these are air suspension seats. Once we got into that market, and we're very successful with it, we started putting them into submarines.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We have gaming seats.
Yeah, okay.
And I think what else? I guess you name it. If it moves, there's going to be some type of Recaro seat.
Should professional gamers be that comfortable? They'll never get up if you...
Unfortunately, yes, they have to be. It's you're talking 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
You're going to get fatigued, and that's we're going to be unveiling an off-road seat that was designed. It took us 2 years in a development. Typically, Recaro seats are... You're going to talk fore aft or lateral movement when you're in the vehicle, you're making a turn. A gentleman by the name of Von Gittin Jr. came to us and said he does a lot of work with Ford Performance.
Yep.
We've worked with him in the Drift series. Came to us and said, hey, I want to go off-road. And we said, you want to do what? Yeah, can you guys work with us on a seat? My friends and the people that I race with, we're now talking about a vertical axis of force that when we're four wheels off the ground and we come down, we're going to be impacting. It's impacting our necks, our spines.
Yeah.
And we said, well, that's a new one for us. Come on in and let's work on it. So today we're going to reveal a two-year study and development and prototype of a seat specifically for those G-forces that you would experience in a vertical axis.
And you guys haven't been in the off-road market before?
No.
That's interesting.
No,
I'm not sure.
No, we wanted to corner. We wanted to keep you side by, you know, side to side, laterally in the seat. And then the comfort, and then relieve the fatigue of a long drive. And, Bond came in one day and said, let's talk about off-road and creating a seat that will be a game changer. We both believe that that's the case from a safety standpoint, comfort, and performance.
So tell me a little bit about how that process starts. Like, how do you start testing for a seat?
So we have, we'll go out and get a wave or a computer simulation of a typical track that they're going to go.
Yeah, okay.
We'll take a seat that we think is maybe 9 out of 10 steps there. We'll actually load that program into a shaker table, and then we get Vaughn to sit in the seat.
Yeah.
And see if it meets and exceeds the expectations. There's a lot more science involved in it.
So you basically have to build this rig that simulates a vehicle going off-road. Then you put somebody like Vaughn getting in it, and it's meant to be uncomfortable. So now you can start developing a seat to make it comfortable. You need to simulate the uncomfortable nature of going off-road.
Exactly.
To start, he'll go, yeah, this ride's about as crappy as my truck does outright.
Right.
Like, it's beating me up already. Now, how do we make that better?
How do we transfer all of that energy away from the body?
So you guys have two seats that you're unveiling today, yeah, or would have already unveiled by time everybody's, yep, listening to this. Walk us through it. What were the two seats that you developed? You have one that's a little more consumer-oriented, the equivalent of a street strips.
Yeah, it's called a Crossport ORV. Both of them will end in ORV, off-road vehicle.
Okay.
And then the Pro Racer XL ORV. And the Pro Racer XL ORV, specifically, if you're driving pavement, you're looking, yeah, forward. You're not worried about your head bouncing. You know, that's not your focus. When you're in ORV land, your head is going back and forth as you're coming down and impacting the ground again. So we take a traditional racing, pavement racing, and we took the, we'll call them the ears, and opened them up so that the peripheral vision is there now for the driver.
Okay.
We included energy absorbing foam, different layers, so that once you're up in the air and you come down, you're going to be supported first in your torso and shoulders, and then you're going to transfer that impact down through the energy absorbing foam, and that lessens the impact on the driver. They don't walk away feeling beat halfway through.
Yeah.
Which improves the performance. Vaughn actually said that in his test cases, he actually felt stronger halfway through the race in his upper body.
Yeah, well, that's good. When you sit in the seats, do they physically feel different? Are they softer than the normal Recaro seats? Mm-hmm. Do they feel any different? Or the energy is more like a progressive rate spring, like on a suspension spring?
Exactly. Well,
yeah,
put.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so on the, for lack of a better term, I guess the street seat that you guys, yep, have, yep, and then the professional seat, sort of the more of the racing seat, that is, you know, to explain it visually, looks more like a racing seat. The, yep, it's more of a single shell. I don't think it doesn't lean back, does it?
No.
It's not a reclining seat of any,
correct,
sort. So you would get the seat situated or lean it back or however you want to do, in your truck and just do a fixed mount, yep, to it. You guys did some testing recently as well. You guys were out on the dirt with the
Utah
Ford Raptor.
Yeah,
Ford,
yeah,
Raptors.
So if somebody purchases the Ford Raptor from Ford,
yeah,
in the package you get a one-day training, because there's five modes of driving in this vehicle, in the Raptor vehicle. So because we supplied it and we do a lot of work with Ford Performance, we got an invitation to come out and be part of a crew. There's like 20 owners of the vehicles that came out. And you start off in the high desert, Baja and around, and then you go up into the mountains, and you put it into trail crawl, and you're going 2 miles an hour up,
yeah,
30 to 40 degree inclines, and then you reverse and come back down again. And we took it through its paces. Half the vehicles had the standard Ford seat. The other half had the Recaro edition. And we got the feedback from the operators, what they felt. They felt maybe a little bit more in control. We did some jumps,
yeah,
which was exhilarating. By the way, you have to go 37 miles an hour. You can't go any faster. You hit the ground, and then the suspension in the truck will pick up that energy and absorb it. You do not feel that jump.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's interesting. The products look fantastic, and it's going to be exciting for you guys to get into the off-road market. And sort of the combination. I mean, you know, we're in L.A., and you'd be surprised how many Raptors you see running around the, yeah, city over there. And it's funny because I've driven them several times, and it literally is one of the most comfortable vehicles you can drive,
yeah,
on the road, even though it's really meant for so much more than just the city streets of L.A.
Well, last night, Vaughn, they have a track set up, so they have the jump, the 37-mile-an-hour jump, plus he had the Raptor, and he was drifting it through a couple of obstacles, and the truck is just, it's incredible. I have mine on order.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the launch. Where do we find out some more information about the seats? Is it going to be up on the website? Or
as soon as we release it, the specifications, we reveal it, the specs will be out, photographs of it.
Okay, what's the website out here?
I'll have to get you that.
Yeah, it's... we'll post it up on the website.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with your unveiling today. I'm sure it's going to be exciting.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Jim. All right. I want to welcome Mark Hamill, as Director of Sales for, well, let's say Comp Performance Group. It's another group of many, many companies. As you guys know, we try to get over here with the guys from Comp every year at SEMA because you're so far away from us in LA.
Yes.
And this is our one time a year to catch up on all the new stuff that you guys have going on.
Absolutely.
You know, you have RHS heads and TCI transmissions and Fast Electronics, and of course, everything valve train related is out there. The booth looks good. Always great new products over here. I'm happy to see that the Fast tunnel ram intake that I got a sneak peek at last year is finally tested and starts shipping.
Yep.
And if you explain it to people, it's a composite tunnel ram intake, but it's a two-piece unit. It has like a bolt-on cap on the top. But inside, you can swap out composite runners so you can change the length, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what we really wanted to do with this intake manifold is make it something unique and something different. Our existing intake manifold that we've been selling for many years has that same technology where you can put different length runners in it, but it's not really an intake manifold that's designed for boost. It will take a little bit, but, I mean, we're not selling it as a boosted intake. So we really wanted to come out with something that was specifically designed for boost but still had that adjustable runner length, so you could really tune it to your engine, you know, the cubic inch, the RPM that you're running, whatever you're doing, and that's basically what we have there.
And what did you have to do to it to make it more boost ready? I mean, it obviously needs to be stronger.
Yeah, the material certainly that we use in it is different than, it's a similar type of material than the other intake, but very, very different. I mean, it's a lot thicker, of course, and just a different type of material to take that boost and to take the heat, of course, too, that's generated. So
these composite intakes, though, they're still incredibly lightweight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this thing is half the weight of any other aluminum intake manifold that's out there.
It seems if that, right? Because you could throw it around. It's pretty...
Absolutely.
It's pretty easy. Well, it looks fantastic, and I love the tunability of it. It was one of the highlights that that we saw last year, and our guys back at the shop, our main guy over there in the shop, loves the idea of that intake.
Yeah, it's a cool piece, that's for sure.
But big news for you guys now is Hemi products, Hemi valve train products. Explain some of the issues, like some of the Hemi owners were having and why... Yep. You needed to solve those issues.
Well, I mean, the big thing more than anything is they just weren't getting a lot of love. I mean, there's a few guys out there that were making a few things, but when we started looking at it, I mean, there is an absolute ton of those 5.7, either the VVT or non-VVT engines, the 6.1s, the 6.4s, and guys are starting to really want to swap those into other cars. So we need to make some stuff that'll make that happen. So we definitely started... A couple years ago, we started making a bunch of what we call our low shock technology series lobes and just found some incredible power out of those. Not only good power, but good life, longevity, everything like that. And so we've made a few other series of camshafts. And so now we've gone into the Hemi stuff and incorporated that same technology into the HRT series that we've just released. And it's incredible, the power. I mean, we had a... I believe it's our Stage 3 cam on the 6.4 makes 170 more horsepower over stock.
With a cam swap. Just a cam swap?
Uh-huh.
Everything else is stock on
it. Basically, what we had is we had a bone stock 6.4.
Yeah.
It did have some headers on it and our throttle body just because it was easier to set up on the dyno. But the engine was run stock with the headers and the throttle body. And then we swapped in a whole bunch of camshafts and ended up with that. Basically, like I said, our Stage 3 cam made 170 more horsepower than factory. Now, it does require a valve spring, of course.
Okay.
But no other major modifications to the engine. I mean, it's a stock intake, 100% stock engine. other than the camshaft and the valve springs.
That number sounds incredible to me because it sounds like you're adding a supercharger to it, without the complexities of a supercharger or the weight added to it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I don't know what a cam change involves on one of the late model Hemi engines, but
it's actually pretty easy, believe it or not.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, everybody talks about the LS and how easy it is to swap a cam. These things are almost exactly the same. I mean, you can pull the front cover off, pull the timing chain off. If it's got MDS lifters, of course, you have to swap those out. But if it's a non-MDS engine, I mean, you can literally spin the cam just like an LS, and it sticks all the lifters up into the yokes, as they call it, on the Hemi or the buckets on the LS, and pull the cam out, put a new cam in. So it's a very, very easy swap over. And a lot of people just, I think, hadn't done it or weren't as familiar with it. But our guy Nick on the dyno in R&D can literally swap a cam on the dyno in about 35 minutes. So,
and what's that cam sound like?
Oh, they sound awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a few different ones depending on what kind of sound you're looking for, but they sound real good. I mean, they have a real nice thump to them, but they still idle nice and drive nice. Very minimal tuning required as far as that goes to make them work right, but, I mean, incredible power gains.
Now, on the high horsepower cars, what are some of the weak links of the engine? The lifters? Is it
the MDS lifter in the Hemis has definitely been a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, those things are failing left and right. And for that matter, we actually just released a replacement lifter for those. Not an MDS lifter, but a non-MDS lifter.
Okay.
So that's something new to us as well. But the lifters are the biggest thing. Probably the second biggest factor with those engines is the piston, actually. The ring land is quite high up in the piston, and when guys put boost on these things and try and make, 150 horsepower, they end up knocking the piston out of it. Well, by putting a camshaft into it,
You're
not going to have that problem. I mean, if you start revving it really, really high, beyond 7,000 RPM for a long period of time, you probably will start to get into a little bit of a piston issue again. But with these camshafts, even that stage 3, I mean, it peaked at 6,500 RPM. So it's still very, very reasonable RPM, makes good torque down low, and it's a phenomenal upgrade.
You know, with the car market now, this high performance muscle car market, we're looking for mods almost immediately, almost as soon as these vehicles come out.
Yep.
And if you look at like the subtle changes that have been done to the Coyote engine, and now they're 480 horsepower, like in the Bullet and stuff.
Yep.
You guys already have like a 2018.
Yep.
Cam swap for the Coyotes, for the Ford Coyotes as well.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. We just came out with that, released it at SEMA here. We've actually been shipping them for a couple of weeks here before. We've got some customers that we worked with, and including our internal R&D guys. But, yeah, we have some really great grinds for normally aspirated and for the boosted stuff for the 2018 up Coyotes. And once again, I mean, incredible power gains on those things too. So very exciting.
And by the way, everything that we're talking about, the Coyote stuff, the Hemi stuff, you have all the supporting things as well. You have the coils, you have springs, you have push rods, in addition to the cams and the lifter.
Yep.
So anything that you guys need in the valve train world, you guys got to cover. I mean, that's why you're comp, right?
Yeah, and we just actually added the secondary timing chains as well. Actually, we have a complete kit for the Coyotes that has the primary and secondary chains, but we have an upgraded secondary chain for the Coyote as well now, too, for the timing chain. So it's that's kind of one of those things that's been out there that not very many people had, and so we've come up with a great product there, and just another great addition to the camshaft as well.
Yeah.
So
before we wrap it up, I was taking a look at air meter that you guys have, the new air fuel ratio meter. It's part of the Fast line, right?
Yes,
that's
correct.
More of the electronics division, the fuel injection electronics division.
Yep.
Explain to us what it is. What was it that I was looking at over there?
Well, kind of where it stemmed from is last year we actually released a Bluetooth controller for our EZ transmission controller through TCI. So we took that same technology in that little Bluetooth module and have now tied it into a wideband O2 sensor. So what you can do is you can either have a single or a dual O2 sensor and a Bluetooth module, and it ties to your smartphone. So all of the gauge package and everything like that is on your smartphone. You can even data log on your smartphone. The Bluetooth module has an output as well, so a 0 to 5 volt reference, so you can output that to like a chassis dyno if you wanted to, or an ECU if you wanted to log air fuel ratio on that. So it's a really, really versatile little deal. And of course, everybody loves stuff on their phones now.
Yeah,
so
right.
We've
Seems
just
like
incorporated
it.
Some cool car stuff. Now you can control not only your transmission like we did last year, but your wideband O2 sensor on your phone.
Now, if you take the car out and you're hitting the racetrack, you're hitting the drag strip or the road course, you can do some data logging on it?
Absolutely. Yep. It's got a continual, I believe it's 2 minutes loop of data logging capability. So yeah, you can record for 2 minutes, just hit pause, go back, look at what you've got. You can also tie in an RPM input into the data logger, or the Bluetooth module, so you can actually see the engine was at 6,500 and it was at 13.2:1 air fuel ratio.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
You can go back and you can make changes to either your carburetor or your ECU based on that. So it's a really, really neat little piece.
Yeah.
It even has a little feature in it actually where you can, it has an output wire where you can actually disable the output wire, hook it up to, say, a relay in the car, and it's like a valet-type deal where it'll kill your car. So you don't have to worry about your car getting stolen.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's just all in this one little piece that we sell. So it's got a whole bunch of really, really neat little features in it.
It's amazing how electronics have to be such a big part of everything that gets developed here now. And we want to be able to do that, control our transmissions, control the engines, control so many things with it,
absolutely,
and get as much data as possible.
Yeah.
So awesome, man. Always great things over at Comp. Thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Thank you very much.
Where do we find you guys online? Where do we start?
Multiple different places. I mean, compperformancegroup.com will get you to kind of all of the different companies, but you can go to compcams.com, fuelairspark.com, or tciautomotive.com. Those are the three main ones, and pretty much everything is on there. And just to add, brand new websites that we just released a couple months ago now, but much better design, way easier to find stuff, just more modern. So everybody should find it a lot easier to do that. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram and all those wonderful things as well.
Right on.
So,
Facebook, Comp Wins. That's
wins.
The Facebook
Absolutely.
Account. Comp Wins.
Absolutely.
All right, Mark, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your SEMA.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right, let me hit Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure, engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure, keep them metal parts from rubbing and robbing. 3 times stronger.
Three right. times, fool.
Than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the best. It's Edge. It's Castrol Edge, everybody. All right.
All right, well, now we're in the Pro Charger booth. My friend Eric Radsons. How are you, Eric?
Oh man, I'm doing wonderful. A little tired, but I'll take it.
It's been a busy SEMA show. This booth has been really, really busy every time we walk by. So it's I appreciate you taking a moment to sit down. But Pro Chargers, Superchargers, the guys who listen to the show know that I'm a fan. I've got a Pro Charger on my 93 Cobra, which is I'm a big fan of that. And we're trying to do something. Custom that we'll talk about later on the truck, on the 95
cool.
Lightning truck. But you guys got a great booth. Cool
Thank
new
you.
Stuff going on. Is there anything new in the supercharger head unit world? You guys have had a huge lineup of superchargers, self-contained and oil feed, various sizes, depending on the RPM and the packaging and the small cars, big cars, racing.
Yep. It's we really had two focuses in the last year, and one of them was racing, which everybody says that, but I mean we really dug in deep, and we went after we really wanted to be able to compete in NHRA Pro Mod.
Okay.
So we spent the last couple of years developing packages with the engine builders, as well as working with the NHRA, and I'm proud to say that as of last week we are now compliant. So in 2020 will be the first time. There will be centrifugal superchargers in NHRA Pro Mod. So
that's huge,
huge. It's going to be
huge.
Awesome. So, we're limited to 52 pounds of boost, just like everybody else. But we've proven we can compete, run the ETs that are needed to be there. So,
having the centrifugal supercharger on there, does that open the door to changing the shape or the hoods of the cars?
So the cars are basically going to be virtually unchanged. The hood line will be the same and all that, but what's going to be awesome is the fan experience because, the turbo cars are quiet. They're just not a lot of drama to it, but you know, a pro charger car making that big boost and those zoomy headers coming out the side, I mean, it's going to be a sound that, you know, half that crowd has never heard unless it was like Top Fuel, you know. So it's going to be awesome to see such a wide combination competing.
What other supercharger types are they using in Pro Mod?
They have a in Pro Mod, they would have a Roots blower. They have a turbo combo, a mountain motor with nitrous, so huge, huge cubic inch with nitrous, and then now us. So we are limited to 526 cubic inches, 52 pounds of boost, running basically a sealed blower. So
okay.
They can't turn it up, turn it down, or any of that. It's one combination. Just like with the Roots blower, they can only run one combination.
Now, as you guys ramped up to get this certification, if you will, from NHRA to allow this to happen, have you been working with some teams, or do we know of some teams that are going to be rolling out with a pro charger?
Elite Motorsports has a car.
Okay.
Galat Motorsports has two cars. I believe Alex Laughlin has tested a car. That was before we had become legal. I can't really talk about it, but confidentially, yes, there is quite a lot of teams that have now, once that became legal, are now going to build blower cars. So
yeah.
they might campaign two cars, you know, a turbo car and or a centrifugal car, because that really it's going to depend on the track. The blower cars are deadly consistent and really consistent on a track that has a inadequate surface.
Right.
So it's going to be really rad. But all of that stuff that we've been learning and using in the last couple of years trickles down to the streetcar stuff. And what's been great is now we got, like, behind us is a 2018 Mustang here that has a kit on it that bolts on 300 horsepower and is emissions legal in California. I mean,
yeah,
I don't live in California, but if I did, I would drive that car with that blower
on
it.
Yeah, this comes up all the time. We talk about our terrible fuel in California. We talk about our emissions in California. We even complain about front license plates because why not? But but this is a big deal, and this is a big investment on your part. And I know companies like SEMA and some other companies are trying to make it little bit more attainable. But getting a CARB certification,
it's a lot of work
for performance parts like supercharging is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, we are trying to lead by example instead of sitting back and waiting. So, like I said, brand new Mustangs, CARB legal. Brand new Corvettes, CARB legal. Brand new Challengers, Chargers, CARB legal. Camaros, CARB legal. My Jeeps, Jeep Gladiator, JK, JL, all CARB legal. Basically, you know, the brunt of everything we make is now CARB compliant.
Well, let's talk about the Jeeps for a second, because with the Jeep Gladiator coming out, we've sort of anticipated the most popular cars at SEMA, of course, are going to be the Jeeps, potentially the Toyota Supra.
Supra.
Which I'm sure could benefit with a little extra power at some
point. Oh, yeah, yeah. But they're turboed already and all that. But, man, absolutely beautiful car.
But the Jeep market seems like it's going to be a big market. And we're seeing some of them here in this sort of this hot rod central hall.
Yeah.
But I'm sure when you get into South Hall over at SEMA, where all the off-road stuff is and the trucks are, there's probably just full of them over there.
They are. Yeah.
What's sort of the base horsepower of the Jeep Gladiator, and what are you guys bringing it up to?
So we actually, I should grab a little piece of paper here, but I know that our kit is 425 horsepower.
Okay.
It's literally a huge gain. And when you're talking about a truck that they're rating with a 7,600-pound tow capacity, I don't think they're talking about stock going up a hill.
Right.
I mean, it needs a little bit more oomph, right?
It does.
And that's where if you got the big wheels and tires and all that, that's where the Pro Chargers really shine. I think there's six Gladiators at this show alone with our kit on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's a... They're out in the lot and all that.
And like you said, they're 50 state legal.
Yes.
Is that sort of what you're trying to do, just get as many of the kits? Everything's 50 state legal.
Yep,
from
this
point forward, it's like, do you even have maybe a base kit that's 50 state legal? Then beyond that, if you want to do your own tuning or a race kit.
Yeah, so we do offer both, yes.
But if you're going to release something for a new vehicle like the Jeep Gladiator, it's got to be 50 state legal,
correct.
Right?
That's what we're doing. Yeah, we actually opened up an office in the San Francisco area. So that's our commitment to how much we care about you know, the California market.
Yeah.
That way also puts us closer to the testing facilities. We can rent Sonoma Raceway to do road course testing and stuff like that because we're based out of Kansas City, but we're seasonal. So, you know, right now I can't rent a road course and do any testing.
Right.
But now having an office in California, that makes it a lot easier. But it again, I mean, even your Cobra that you got, that's technically a 50-state legal kit if you would have ordered the base kit, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've got Mustangs covered, you know, from beginning to end, and we're doing the same with all the Corvettes now, too. So it feels good to be doing it the right way and allowing a person to buy something and you never have to worry about. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even the truck that I have, the 95 Ford Lightning, mm-hmm. It's here at the SEMA show. It's in the MagnaFlow booth front.
Yeah, out front.
We just finished the exhaust on that. And the exhaust is a little bit overkill because we're anticipating the new engine going in and things like that. So it's a little bit bigger than usual. But when we built it with catalytic converters and whatnot on it. So why not make it clean?
Speaking of catalytic converters, there's a tidbit here. So everybody says, you got to get rid of them. You got to get rid of them. That is every, you know. I'm not saying that, but, of course, that's what everybody on the internet says. So the car behind me, 2018 Mustang, no headers. You know, it's factory manifolds, factory cats, factory exhaust, and all that. That car on E85, through all of that, makes 937 to the wheel.
Wow.
With a bone stock blower kit. Now, on pump gas, she makes about 670 wheel.
Yeah.
When it has the 85 in it, you can turn it up a little bit and get aggressive with the timing. But, literally, you're talking about 1,000 crankshaft horsepower through the factory exhaust. We have a car at work that we used as a demo. We have a Z06 Corvette. It made 1,100 wheel through the factory exhaust, factory manifolds, factory cats, factory mufflers. So it's really just amazing that stock motors, stock trannies, stock exhaust systems let you make 1,100 wheel. Like, that's insane. I mean, 5 years ago, making 1,000 horsepower with the big block Chevy was like, oh, man, that's a really big deal. But now here we are, like, street cars have to make 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
And it happens. It's a real deal.
It's funny. Like, that's going to be the new number. I mean, you're going to be pretty close. Like, it's got to be 1,000 horsepower at this point.
Yep.
So I anticipate maybe next year at SEMA, we're going to start seeing you guys doing a lot with a C8 Corvette.
Yeah.
I was at the debut for it, and it looks pretty intense. And even what I've seen so far when I was there at the unveiling in that engine compartment and the way that sort of the cover goes over it seems like the centrifugal supercharger is going to be a big hit for those vehicles.
It is.
Because you just don't have a lot of room in there.
No, there's not a lot of room. We've already got some stuff in play. We got to see the car early. Our engineers got to check it out. There's some panels that are removable and things like that kind of help out to our advantage.
Yeah.
So it's a jump from our normal, but... I mean, I think we'll be okay. So.
Yeah, Corvette could be a big market, though.
Oh, you know, we do need to talk about.
Yeah.
Monday, right before I got on a plane to come here to SEMA, just launched our Toyota lineup. So we're doing 4Runners.
Okay.
We're doing Tacomas.
Good.
And Tundras. So we launched. 4Runners are shipping as of right now. You could order a kit today at the SEMA show and get a 4Runner kit, and then hopefully next week we'll have the to launch the Tacoma and the Tundra a couple weeks after that. So.
Is how much of the truck market overall is your business versus the cars?
It depends on the region. So southern states, Texas, and all that, very big in the truck market. California is now starting to be bigger in the truck market, and I think the Toyotas are going to be huge in this area. But it really just depends on the demographic and where you're at.
You know,
like our Mustang sales are very high in Florida, Alabama, Georgia. It's like each car kind of has a demographic of where it is.
I was out here a week or so ago testing the new Shelby GT500.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fantastic, and it's just what a great car to drive. But as part of that program, I went over to Shelby American and visited their facility, and all the cars and the trucks and everything that they're making there, the sort of a Shelby-ified version of all those things. And I was talking to their guy, and he's like, take a guess how many Shelby Mustangs that we build or tune or modify versus the Shelby trucks. And I was like, I don't know. You probably do 30% trucks. He's like, 80. 80% trucks.
Wow. Yep. Yep. I would definitely believe
20% are their cars now.
So I would say our shocking thing that most people didn't realize is if you're grouping truck and SUV into the same,
yeah,
it's like huge. But if you broke out SUV, it's actually for us bigger. We sell a lot of kits for Escalades, Denalis, Suburbans, and it's unbelievable how many daily driven family vehicles we sell kits for. Because they can put it on, it's faster now, and it's fun, and you just kind of put that little spice into it, you know?
You're buying the vehicle, you're buying those type of vehicles for its functionality first, right?
Yep.
And then we can always add hot rodness to it.
Absolutely.
And why not be able to do that? Because you can't buy the small truck and go, oh, let's add a third row of seats to it. Like, that's a big pain in the butt, right?
I mean,
so get the Escalade, get a Tahoe or something and go, let's add some power, maybe some big brakes and stuff like that, and make it fun.
I'd say at ProCharger alone, I think there's about 3 ProCharged Tahoes in the parking lot every day for that reason. I mean, we're all dads, you know. We all still want a little bit of a hot rod. 500 horsepower that you drive every day is pretty darn cool. Plus, they peel out. It's awesome. But, I mean, probably my next vehicle will be a Gladiator because it checks off all the boxes. I can go off-roading. I can put my kid in it. I can go to Home Depot and put something in the bed. It'll tow my boat. And I can put a blower on it and, go off-roading and have an extra horsepower.
Now you're making all the horsepower with it.
So it's I mean, I'd like to have a Mustang as a daily driver, but it doesn't fit my lifestyle. It's a toy, you know?
Yeah, it's a toy.
So, which I still have one because me and you are 93 Cobra brothers.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. So that's the thing about Eric is Eric and I follow each other on Instagram and send each other notes and stuff. And he's a big Fox Body Mustang guy as well.
Yep.
He's got the same era of Ford muscle design and likeness that I do.
I just picked up a pace car. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah,
so
it's badass.
I got a Coyote for it now, and it'll all be coming together. So, I bought that as a one owner car. She was 82 years old. Bought it new in '79. That was her daily driver for 15 years. And like she said, she thought she stopped driving it about 8 or 10 years ago. Couldn't push in the clutch anymore. And I ended up tracking her down. And so I figured the car's deserving of some modern updates.
And you're going to do a Coyote swap in it.
Yep, going to do
it. But you guys at ProCharger have a
Coyote swap kit.
So if you're Coyote swapping into almost anything,
yep,
you guys have a supercharger kit that basically works with it.
Yep, we do. So, I'm going to do I got the control pack for it in the 6R80 because, again, I like to relax when I drive to work. I don't want to be shifting gears in it. I know everybody's going to yell at me for not putting a stick in it, but and I'm going to do a P1X on it. So that'll probably make about 700 to the tire and something. That's just too much for that, but at least I can brag about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, listen, I appreciate the time.
Thank
you. Like you said, you guys got a busy booth here, but we're going to wrap things up. We can go to ProCharger.com.
Yep, absolutely. ProCharger.com. On Instagram, we're ProCharger Superchargers. And Facebook, it's also ProCharger. So.
Cool. Thanks, Eric.
Awesome. Thank you.
Real quick, let me tell you a little bit about Geico, our friends at Geico. We love them over there. Everybody's got a to-do list. You're dropping off your dry cleaning, picking up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. If you just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Go to geico.com. Happy to sit down with my friend Dan Sandberg. He's the CEO of Brembo North America. And,
once again, every year.
And a podcaster.
Yes. Now I am. I'm living your life now.
Yeah. It's the podcast is doing good. Your podcast is doing good.
We're doing okay.
It was internally. It was for all the Brembo employees.
It ran for 5 or 6 years internally.
Okay.
And I think I've told this story before. 7 years. Oh, sorry. Okay. That was an employee speaking.
That's okay.
I ran it, and almost immediately our employees came to us and said, it'd be really great to hear about from customers.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, well, let's get some customers. So we got Jay Leno and Crutchlow and Jim Campbell from Chevy Performance and who else? Simon Pagenaud. And we had really some really good content. And one day somebody got smart and said, you know what? Why don't we use some of this stuff and take it public? Because it's not just about Brembo, it's about auto stuff, and it was a lot of fun to do, and we are getting some really great interviews. So last June we issued the first episode of Brembo Red, so and it's pretty good. We're bringing it out every right now it's every 2-3 months we come out with an episode, and we're getting pretty good response from it. So
it's on iTunes now?
It's on iTunes and it's on Google Play.
Yeah.
And you're probably after this podcast, you'll tell me where else we should put it, right? Yeah. You're the podcast expert, so.
Well, you're going to start with doing more episodes and start releasing them, you know, every month and every week, and then.
I don't know if I have time for that, so given that it's your job, it's my second job, so it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It can be a lot of work. And Chris is here with us, and he produces this show, and he produces Adam Carolla's show, which is 5 days a week, and
I'll trade you for Chris for maybe a first-round draft choice next year.
You definitely can't have Chris, because we wouldn't be sitting here if there was no Chris involved. Anyway, here we're at SEMA, and always new stuff. Always good to catch up with you guys. And I know you got some new product and stuff out there. The first thing that caught my eye was a giant 10-piston caliper. I know it's a prototype caliper for you guys. I don't know if it's on any vehicles yet, but
yeah, I wouldn't even call it a prototype. It is. We have used it on some vehicles. It's not that I know of in production yet, but we have some pending big meaty cars that might put it on. But you know, the biggest caliper I think that we have in production that's just probably feet from us is that GT500, the Mustang.
Yeah,
and that is one beautiful car, and that is one monster caliper.
Okay, so now that Ford is far away from us on one end of the building and GM's on the other side of the building, C8 Corvette or GT500?
Oh, he's putting me in a tough position.
Come on now.
You know,
this is a fair question because you make brakes for both of them.
You know what? I believe that it's time in my career to buy both.
Yes, so, that's the best answer yet.
So, I mean, I think they're different cars. You know,
they really are
the
different
day.
Cars.
So, I mean, if you're a low to the ground sports car, a Ferrari, Porsche kind of guy, you know, the Corvette would be something that's definitely quite a bargain. Looking at all the content on that car, so yeah. I'd say the Corvette. But if you're a muscle guy. And you grew up looking at the Mustang that's gone through 100 different iterations. It's just a different car, right? And it's
it
higher center
car.
Of gravity. But, I mean, if you're just into speed and, just a car that's not going to go crazy on you, I think, you know, you can't go wrong with both of those cars. I mean, they're really fantastic. You drove it, right?
I did, yeah. So I drove the GT500. I did the road course with it. I did a track day there. I did track drag racing with it, did a canyon run with it. Haven't driven the Corvette C8 yet, but being a Mustang guy, loved it, loved everything about it. But when you say, hey, it's a muscle car versus whatever the Corvette is, a performance car, a sports car, the GT500 is still now every bit of a performance car. We hit the road course with that thing.
How was the center of gravity, though? Did you feel like you were higher up? You know, muscle cars tend to be a little more.
You do feel a little bit higher up, but all these new cars today, they have such a high belt line on them. So, like, if you try to hang your arm out the window, it's up by your ear anyway. So, it's not. You always feel so low into a car. I know it's very different than what the Corvette's going to be, but the track times they were turning around that road course were phenomenal. Of course, the brakes were great. The carbon fiber wheels make a 2-second difference around the road course when they tested it back to back. And then we hit the drag strip, and it's just you know the features they built into it, the line lock control and the Christmas tree and a launch control and
all of the intelligence in that manual, and I'll put manual in quotes, transmission that they have on the car are pretty impressive. We were just listening today to one of the drivers who was telling us that you can actually take that car right into the corner and it shifts on its own. It knows the angle of the car approaching the corner. It knows when you're starting to steer.
Yeah.
So it knows when you're in a corner and you don't get that jerk, you know, when it's shifting on its own.
It does. And it's fantastic. And definitely don't discount a Mustang, a GT500 that no longer has a true manual transmission. That 7-speed DCT is badass. And it's built by Tremec. I mean, if somebody wanted to swap in a regular rowing transmission into that thing, it'd be easy to do. There's tons of Mustangs that have manuals. There's pedals for them. There's shifter kits for them. It's got a Tremec in it already. If you wanted to do the conversion, you could. It wouldn't be as fast, but I'm sure there's going to be that GT500 supercharged 760 horsepower engine offered as a crate engine with the electronics, and then people will be bolting up manual transmissions,
you know,
all day long.
I used to drive a shifter. You know, I had, believe it or not, a Supra that was manual back in 84. You know, my feeling on a manual, I hate to say it, is, you know, I want a car I can eat a Whopper and drive, and, you know, the shifter's got to go. So, you know, I'm not so upset with electronic transmission.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I drove it as well, and being a Mustang fan and a manual transmission fan, I had no problem with that car. I got very comfortable with driving it in automatic mode and then paddle shifting. And then, because I was so busy playing around with the different sport mode and track mode and normal mode, and then there's three
or
four. Were
there differences? Could you really feel differences?
Oh, you absolutely could. You feel it in the MagnaRide transmission. You feel it in the steering feedback. You can tune the exhaust as well, and then you can program your own modes. On, we're going to get into your stuff, too, at some point. But,
this is the Mustang show.
You know, but driving down that road, you put it in Sport or Sport Plus or Sport or Track mode, you feel the suspension tighten up. You feel every little bump in the road on that MagnaRide in Track mode. And then when you soften it up, it makes it quieter and then softens the suspension, and you could drive it every day with electronics and stuff. Now we can get the best of all worlds.
Well, I'm going to see if you're right, because next podcast, I hope to have one in the garage by then. So we'll
there
see
you go. So. One of the things that I liked is you can change the different modes and then independently change the steering and the exhaust.
Really?
So if you wanted to put it in normal mode with the soft suspension, but you could put the exhaust in track mode to make it loud and fun. So you can really kind of tune everything up. So it's great. So tell me about the brakes on that car. What did you guys do?
Well, you know, the brakes, you know, big. That's you know, that sums it up at the end of the day. I mean, you have 420 millimeter caliper, rotor on the front.
Yeah, what is that, 16 and a half?
That is
16 and a half inch?
European translation, about that, yes. So, I mean, that's big. I mean, that's really, really big. Once you go over 400, those are very, very large. And then, you know, what I like is...
Are they six-piston front? Are they
six-piston front. Six-piston front. And again, versus when you look at the Corvette, there's a four-piston front caliper on that. But, you know, you're dealing with a different weight set. You're dealing with a different car. But both of them are just as fast, have pretty sophisticated brake systems on both of those cars. And... you should have felt the brakes on that car, because it's those are really strong bite.
I drove it around the road course, which was fun, but then was able to get in the vehicle with one of Ford's professional drivers and really hit that thing fast. And that's where you see the brakes. I can tell you that all of us that are out there driving the cars or even having a track day, we're not even scratching the surface on what those brakes can do. When you get a professional driver and you do a ride-along with that guy, and you're like, this is unbelievable.
You know, we do use some race technology on there, too, which is kind of cool. We have everybody talks six-piston. Okay, that's just more than two or more than four. But these are staggered in size and in location, so you get a very, very even pressure. You get very, very even pressure, you know, from the pads on the rotor. So because they're staggered, you have different pressure points, you have different, you know, you have different friction, and that gives you that feel, if you will, where you're getting a lot of pad contact on the rotor at a time. So it's kind of cool.
How do you guys test for that? Do you start in CAD software or some sort of computer simulation to figure out where the piston should be on the pad?
Sure. I mean, we have a lot of computer simulation and optimization that we do to make sure the weight is good, to make sure the friction's good, to see where we're going to see failure points or potential failure points in the rotor itself. But I have to tell you, our customer's goal, and I guess our goal would be to try to do all of that as much as you can on computer, so then you just make the parts, put them on the car, and everything works fine. Unfortunately, you know, physics is not yet modelable in its entirety, and I think we do a lot of road testing. So if you go to our Plymouth headquarters, we typically have at least 6 to 10 cars that are probably out on the road where we're testing, and this car was no different. I mean, we had the Mustang out for quite a while, doing all the testing and everything for it.
So here's sort of a business case question for you. The Mustang specifically, we drove the normal version with the handling pack, and then I drove the carbon pack, which sort of it used to be a track pack. That's a carbon pack. It has the aero and the exposed carbon fiber wing. Carbon fiber wheels, they're eliminating as much weight on that suspension as possible. And they're saying, all things being equal, on the same track, same driver, it's roughly a 2 second per lap improvement with the carbon fiber wheels. If they're going to do that and see the benefit in that weight savings, why not have a lighter weight, like a carbon ceramic disc, as an option on that thing as well? What does Ford tell you?
I don't know why they didn't go with a carbon, a system. But, you know, I mean, a lot of times it depends what their marketing guys feel. They want to keep the price point in. I mean, carbon is expensive. I would have added probably 5 to 7, you know, it depends on how they packaged it up.
Well, their carbon package is $18,000. It's the difference between, an 80-something thousand-dollar car and $100,000.
Well, and that $100,000 is a big number when it comes to these cars. And, you know, when it comes to even the Corvette and the Mustang, they want to have options where you can be over 100, but that's not their model, right? That's not where they're trying to position that vehicle. I think all of them feel that you can get performance, you can get really nice performance in a vehicle that doesn't cost you $100,000. Once you go over the $100,000 mark, you also are bringing in a lot of competition right or wrong, do you want to pay $100,000? Well, you and I had this conversation before. We see cars here that are all dressed up. We saw a Mustang last year. Was it maybe a Speed Corps or something? Which was $150,000. Beautiful car. 700 horsepower. Had a, what was it? It was a, like a GT550 with a blower in it and everything.
Yeah.
And they juiced it all up. But at the end of the day, when you go out and you lay out that check for $140,000, you say, it's a Mustang. I mean,
it is.
You know,
I get it, but let's say, look, our friends at Edmunds were running this scenario with us as well, and Edmunds is buying two cars. They're buying a C8 Corvette with the Z51 package and a GT500 with the handling package, but not the carbon package, because they wanted both cars to fall into that like $85,000 to $88,000 range, and they wanted them to be sort of price point competitive so they can kind of put them up against each other. I don't know, a lot of people are cross shopping those cars, but in the world of content, those are two fun cars you want to read about going head to head. So they didn't get the carbon package, but if they did and it was $100,000, and let's say carbon ceramic brakes would have been $5,000 or $6,000. Once you're at that price point, is there much of a difference between $100,000 and $105,000? I don't know that that's...
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I love carbon brakes, because I think they're just, there's a little bit different feel on them and there's a little bit extra bite. But at the end of the day, let's stop and step back a little bit, all right? Ford GT, the sports car, the race car, had iron brakes.
Yeah.
Okay, not carbon fiber, all right? The fanciest version of the carbon, the GT that you could buy had carbon. So, the different applications, the guy who's going on track day, maybe, a couple races a week, you put him in carbon, he's happy as a clam, he gets pretty good performance, But you take that carbon system out and you go ahead and track it in a normal race car, you're going to go through it like crazy, and it's going to cost you a fortune to replace it every week, right?
Yeah.
So, you got to balance what the capability of the system is,
Who's using carbon brakes in the racing world?
I wish I had our race guy Mike Messina here who could tell you who exactly. I mean,
it's
prohibited in some of the races. IndyCar uses carbon.
Okay.
Right now, I know IMSA, there's a number of series where carbon is allowed, but it's in most of the, I think, some of the prototype series and things like that.
But not much in the sports car racing series. Is there not in a lot of sports cars? Is there Porsches?
Because a lot of them are
Pratt
still...
Miller Corvettes, are they running carbon?
At times, yeah. I think a lot of the sports cars, some of the rules there is, right, it's got to be somewhat stock. So they limit you in that. And again, the racing guys that are running these series have concerns about cost, right? They're trying to get teams in. The first thing you don't want to do is say, hey, let's go carbon, all right? Because that's going to bring you to a whole different dimension. And as I said, in a racing scenario, you're going to be replacing those brakes all the time, right? You want to go with something fresh every single race. That's costly when it comes to carbon.
Yeah. In the consumer world, in the sports car world, getting, ordering your Porsche or your Acura NSX with steel brakes versus carbon brakes,
personally, in that kind of situation, I go carbon. All right? You're already paying all this money for the car. Get the carbon. I will never replace my brakes ever. Okay,
yeah.
Maybe.
So when you say that, you mean you're never going to do the disc or the pads?
I won't
last
do the disc
longer?
Or the pads, all right? Because the pads and the discs are carbon. I doubt that I will, number one, probably put enough mileage on that car. But even if I did, I think the brake job would be at 80, 90,000 miles or something like that on carbon. I mean, obviously, if I drove like you did, probably maybe at 60.
Yeah.
But in reality, you know.
Is there a rule of thumb? Do you get 50% better life out of a carbon package? Versus
you know, you theoretically, if I drove my Porsche reasonable track day here and there or whatever, I don't think you ever change it. I
You're
don't
not
think
change
you ever
them.
Do.
Everybody in the room is nodding their head. No changing them.
But again, if I go track day every week,
yeah,
okay, and or I'm on that track a lot, I mean, you're going to go through it. But again, it's, you know. Those packages are made for, you know, great heat, you know, really great heat absorption without fade, a lot of great stopping power. They don't disintegrate. There is some dust that's involved in carbon, but at the end of the day, they're almost a lifetime brake system.
Yeah, so I can see it being worth it, especially if you're getting like
the brake, and again, you've driven carbon. The braking on it is impressive.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a impressive thing.
In the early days, like a full carbon fiber disc. Now it's carbon ceramic. It's
well,
hybrid.
Yeah, we're talking carbon ceramic. If you're talking carbon,
yeah,
that's racing. Okay?
That's racing,
and that raises
carbon,
some other issues.
It's squeaky and...
Well, and not only that, you got to heat it up.
You got to heat it up.
Okay,
that's the big thing.
Everybody looks when they go on the track, you see these guys driving back and forth, you know, even with iron, they're trying to heat up the brakes, heat up the pads, you know, heat up the tires, all this stuff. But carbon, you really have to get heat into that system before it starts to be effective.
So every time we're mentioning carbon, by the way, we're referencing carbon ceramic, which is the modern version of it. It's much more straightable. You don't need to get a lot of heat in them to work. They work right away. They last a long time.
Correct.
They're still lightweight. They're
used in some racing applications, all right? But, again, you have to be a team with a lot of money if you're going to do that because you're going to be replacing them. And it's, you know, it's not a rotor. It's not an iron rotor. It's a carbon rotor. It's expensive.
Is the price point of that going to come down? Or are we going to start to see that
it's
available
come
down
quite on
more cars?
I mean, if you would have told me you can go to, like, a Corvette, I think the last series of Corvettes, you could get a carbon package. I think it was... You know, somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000, you know, to get their carbon package. I mean, these packages were $20,000, $25,000 10 years ago. So higher volume, we are seeing some, you know, some benefit of that in the price. But people don't realize carbon ceramic rotor is a very long process to make those rotors. All right?
Yeah.
It's a baking process. It's, you know, you're baking and then putting fibers and baking and you know, so it's a longer process. It's not just you put the stuff in a mold, it cooks, comes out, you machine it, and you're done. It's going back through a number of different processes with heat and pressure. So there is a long timeline on that. So it's expensive to make. So will it ever drop to $50 a rotor like an iron rotor? No.
No.
Not going to happen.
No.
But do I see systems that are in the $4,000 or $5,000 range? It's possible. I think we'll see that in the next 10 years. We'll start to see systems like that.
That's good. I mean,
real issue is supply, to be honest with you, and finding guys who can do it.
Like there was a time where we wouldn't see a Ford Focus RS with Recaro seats, and we wouldn't see Brembo brake kits on trickling down to the more affordable sports cars and performance cars, and now we can. You guys are figuring out a way to make it happen. Also, the manufacturers are seeing the value in having those performance items with the brands attached to them. Putting Brembo brakes on them is what we want. Right?
And I think, you know, I don't think we're counted out, even in the not in the performance area. If you go to the electrics now, which is one of the questions I get a lot, is what happens with electrics? You know, we think we're positioned in exactly where you want to be, all right? We're lightweight, and our calipers have low drag, all right? So, you know, you apply that brake, the you know, pads come in, grab that rotor, but you want to let go. You want those pads to withdraw. Because if they don't, then you're going to get drag. And, you know, when you have a battery in your car, you want to get as much mileage. You don't want things hanging on to your car and braking. So, you know, lightweight and low drag, we think Brembo is smack dab in the middle of where we need to be. And it's really, really important. We're on some electric cars that they're getting extra mileage because they're using Brembo brakes.
So let's talk about the future. Maybe, I don't know how many steps ahead of this. Does it make sense for us to see electric brake calipers? And then how do we make that possible?
It'll happen, all right? And yeah. The reason why is everything is becoming electrified in the vehicle. We see right now that, you know, I would say probably in the next 10 years you will have full brake-by-wire systems. Now, whether you have redundancy, in other words, a hydraulic system running underneath,
right?
You know, you probably will initially. But we really feel that the brake system will go electric. It'll probably go first to a sort of a hybrid system,
right,
where you have electronic pedal, electronic sensors going to the actuation in the brakes corners themselves. You may still have hydraulics closing the caliper, if you will, over. So you have a switch which is triggering a motor which is closing the caliper. But eventually the whole thing will go electronic, similar to our EPB.
Yeah.
Right? So our electronic parking brake right now, everybody remembers, you used to have that crazy pedal on the left. Or you'd have the handle.
Yeah.
All right, with the cable and everything else, which is very manual. You now have most of the car, not most, but I'd say a majority of the cars now have electric parking brakes.
Yeah, almost everything new has electric
parking brakes.
Which is
just a button, right?
Yeah.
There's no pedal, no cable. Throw the switch, motor comes on, tightens up the, you know, either a drum or a brake, you know, around the caliper, around a rotor. And then when you want it off, you press the button, it withdraws.
So the first evolution of electric brakes we're already starting to see, and that's electronics on top of hydraulics,
yes,
right? Like
yep.
Some of the cars we have now can hit the brake for you. I think I was just driving the Lincoln Corsair.
See, and that's external. It's not even over the top. It's kind of in parallel, right? So you have a controller that will actually trigger that. And it's, you know, on a lot of these, it's actually hitting, you know, the master cylinder and basically sending sending the hydraulic fluid
so
to where it
don't
goes.
Back over
it's like electric
know, someone's
pedal.
Bike or a kid or
yep.
something. Yeah.
Yep. So but that's in place.
When we get to an electric caliper, paint a picture for me. What does this sort of look like? Does the caliper really start to change shape? Does the caliper have like a little round electric motors where the pistons would be?
It has a motor that's attached. All right.
Is there
so
like
look at
one
our EPB.
Motor
our
and
EPB has a motor that's attached. Now, what'll be interesting is how do you consolidate the size of that motor to leverage the pressure? All right. Because you don't want this big, humongous motor hanging off, you know, your caliper. So you want maybe it's multiple motors. Maybe it's some new type of motor. Maybe it isn't even a motor. Maybe it is something else that's forming the clamping pressure, if you will. So those are the things that we're working on right now to see how we can incorporate that all into the system. And we have. I mean, we do have a brake-by-wire system that we're now working with several customers on, seeing what the feasibility is at for new vehicles. So, and the, you know, it has advantages. It's faster. Electrics are faster, so you know, and it can integrate well with the emergency systems in the car, emergency braking. It also can be adjustable. So you know, you talked about like the Mustang, where you switch to sport mode or track mode or whatever, and you change the steering of the car, you change the suspension of the car. How about changing the braking of the car, and then have a separate sub menu where you can talk about pedal. You know, pedal travel. Do you want it to be really touchy so you can almost move your foot off the gas and just touch the brake and it locks right in and gives you braking? Or do you want longer pedal feel so you can ride the brakes and maybe you're a drifter or doing whatever you're doing?
Right. We can dial that in now with steering, with electric steering,
yep.
which, by the way, took a few years for people to start to get it right. But I can imagine being able to, for you guys to be able to control the pistons independently. You said that you're sizing up the pistons of a six piston caliper differently or locating them differently in the caliper so it gets even pressure. But what if you're able to control them individually like fingers and then maybe now you can start to apply, you know, one piston pressure and then it goes to two or four or, you know,
or how about this? You have sensors that detects wear, and if you see that it's wearing strange because of the wear on the pad, you can adjust how the pad's approaching the rotor. I mean, I think, you know, it opens up a wide panorama. And again, this is, again, technology that we've used in F1, for example, where you have temperamental drivers who want more pedal travel, less pedal travel. Maybe they're short, maybe they're tall. You know, they have different way that they approach the brake pedal. And we've, you know, in the past, we've adjusted the braking system, we have electronics now that do that. So they can say softer, larger, you know, smaller, tighter, you know, and then do all that. So it yeah. really opens up a just more dynamics of the car to the driver.
It's going to be excellent. And now it's getting me excited. You guys got to hurry up.
from your mouth to our customers'
yeah,
ears.
Getting on. All right. So back to reality before we wrap things up. Tell us about the online store that you guys got going on now, because now we can get Brembo parts for any car out there, pretty much, regardless if it came with Brembo brakes
or not. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, and this, again, just really serves our customers who just want replacement rotors and pads for their vehicle. Mm-hmm. We're not talking big Brembo kits or anything. We're talking just your day-to-day guy who needs a brake job. It's really, really easy now. You go to buybrembo, B-U-Y, Brembo.com. It sends you to the Brembo store. You put your car in there. It'll tell you exactly what parts you need, and you could either buy it right there on the spot, and, of course, it'll be authentic Brembo rotors and pads. You at least have the part number and everything else. Go shop on the Internet. And, you know, several of our customers, their, you know, different stores and things on the web carry Brembo. And it's really, really easy. You know, we set the store up to, number one, make it just easy for people. If they really want it, they know what they want, go get it. Here's your part numbers. Go buy it. There's always discounts that we have that are out there on our website. But in fact, you know, one of the complaints we got from some of our customers is that some of the people who sell our products, they weren't quite sure about part numbers and what they needed exactly. Yeah. This website becomes the reference. So they can easily see what they're getting, what they need, what's the rear, what's the front, what pads go with it, and they could buy it there, as I said, or go on other site and get it. And we're much more accessible right now and easy to get.
So. Yeah, you know, getting the good quality parts is certainly important. True story, a friend of mine, she has an Infiniti G35. The brakes were done, I don't know, 20,000 miles ago, not that long ago in the world of brakes for just a sedan. And on the front brakes, she said they're squeaking, and I noticed that the metal backing plate on the pad is sliding off. It's sliding off, and it's somehow coming apart. And I said, well, let's go get brake pads and rotors and just get the authentic Brembo stuff. You said buy Brembo, but we were using BremboPartsUSA.com.
Well, actually, there was BremboStoreUSA.com, which
BremboStoreUSA.
We like it. It was actually what the website was called. And if you go to BremboStoreUSA.com, you'll go to the same place.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm kind of a simple guy, and I think it was because I was doing a lot of interviews and I couldn't remember what that was. So I said, we're going to make it easy for you.
Okay.
BuyBrembo.com. I said, that's simple.
We went to the website. We got the good stuff.
But I think it's important
stuff.
What you said is, you know, we're OE specification. So we make a lot of these rotors to begin with, but even if we didn't make them, we go out, find out what the specs are for those rotors, and they're original equipment specifications for both the pads and the rotors. You're getting good stuff. It's going to last. And you know what? One of the things that people don't realize is, you know, you go to a garage and you tell them what you want. If they don't have Brembo, tell them to go to buybrembo.com. They can order it up, deliver it right to your garage mechanic or whatever, and they'll make the change.
Listen, when it comes to brakes, you got to get stuff that you know is going to work. And like I said, these brakes were not that old, and they're falling apart. I've never even seen that before. The pad is still
on
there.
You know, it's no big deal. If your brakes don't work, you don't stop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a problem.
Well, it's just the one tire, so if you hit the brakes hard, it'll dart right, I think.
Yeah. And, that's why you have four corners.
Yeah, that's why there's four corners. There's some redundancy involved.
No, seriously, though, from a safety standpoint, I mean, I don't know what else you would want to buy and make sure it works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you drove like my grandfather. He never drove over 30 miles an hour. So I'm not sure he really needed Brembo at the end of the day.
Well, I don't know. If you put the carbon ceramics on, I think it'll last 100 years.
I don't know. I'm not sure he ever did a brake job. He had a Dodge Dart. I just remember that when I was really, really young, the old Dodge Dart. And I don't think that car was washed all the time, and I don't think he ever went over 30 miles an hour. He'd come pick us up, take us to the drugstore to get candy or whatever. And honest to God, I don't think he ever. I think one time he had to drive. It was really raining really hard, and he had to get us home quick. I think he went like 32, and I mean, he was getting buzzed. I could see it over there. He was like so excited he got it over 30.
They're over 30. Whoa. I don't know. That car probably feels like 75. So
yeah, it was different.
All right. Well, thank you so much. The guys, the website's buybrembo.com, and go on to iTunes and subscribe to Brembo Red, Dan's podcast.
Appreciate it. Maybe we'll have you on Brembo Red soon.
Yeah, we should do it. I'd love to.
It'd be very efficient. I'd just give you my microphone. You take yours.
And I'll record the whole interview and mail it to you.
And we'll have Chris cut it up.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Dan. Okay, now we're talking to a Bill Tischner in the Holly booth. Hey, Bill, how are you?
What's up, Matt? Am I a Bill Tischner?
Are you?
Are there others?
Is there?
That's how you said it, I think.
We're talking to a Bill Tischner?
Yeah.
We're talking to the Bill Tischner.
There's only
we're
one
talking
of me, Matt.
To the, I don't know, is your dad
my
named
dad
Bill
is
Tischner?
Actually Bill Tischner.
Well, there you
so
go.
Funny. So. I was just telling somebody about my dad. This lady was started talking about horses, and I said my dad was a thoroughbred jockey and rode 7,000 horse races.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That's a lot.
I guess racing's in my blood. I just moved
I
over
to
cars.
So. Oh, Bill, man, we've known each other maybe almost a decade now.
Yep. Probably longer than that.
It's been a minute for sure. And Holly has grown massively. We've talked about it in the past couple of years how Holly's just sort of stepped up and acquired a bunch of companies, sort of put them all under one roof. There's been a lot of integration of these different brands and companies over the years. Of course, MSD and so many brands, but recently Flowmaster, I believe, as well.
Flowmaster, Hurst, B&M Shifters, and then even APR and Dinan on the Euro side.
Oh, yeah, the BMW stuff, Dinan BMW. Yeah,
Audis and Volkswagens and... really high quality
is that,
stuff.
Is that weird for you to getting into the German?
It's weird,
I mean, judging by your accent.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see as many of those around Bowling Green, but I love them. You know, I mean, they're super awesome cars. My kids love them. My kids keep me young and tell me what's cool, you know?
Yeah.
And
you're like, hey, Dad, go buy Dinan.
Yeah. No, they tell me what cars are cool.
Yeah, what cars are cool. Yeah, that's all right.
So they had me on the search for Supras out here at the show.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be no shortage of Supras. We were anticipating Supras and Jeep Renegades pretty much everywhere,
there's
right?
There's a lot of them here.
Obviously, I'm a big Ford guy, and we spoke last year. And we talked about all of the LS stuff that you guys have done, various LS manifolds, just any configuration you could possibly want, you guys have, and all of the EFI systems, the Holly EFI systems that are available for that. But this past year, you've really stepped up your game in the Ford world, even doing the first Ford Fest.
Yep. So, so LS Fest was part of how we kicked off our foray into telling consumers that we are making LS parts and getting serious about it. And so when it was time to get into more, you know, we've got lots of Ford parts through the 31 brands, but, you know, we wanted to do more and be, you know, have more relevant, newer stuff. And when it was time to tell the consumers that, hey, we haven't forgot about you Ford guys.
Yeah.
We love you too. And we said, hey, that LS Fest thing worked okay. And let's do a unique event for the Ford market. And
how long has LS Fest been going on?
10 years.
And that's grown. That's massive, right?
Yep.
Like, this is a really big event for
we
you guys.
We literally shut the streets of Bowling Green down this year. Like gridlock.
Yeah.
It was crazy, actually. So, but people love it. And what's happened is everybody that comes, they leave and go tell their friends, you got to come back next year with me.
Yeah.
And they all came back. And now it was so big that we're into the numbers now when they go tell their friends that thousands more come back.
What kind of attendance are you getting at LS Fest?
So this year, Bowling Green had 35,000.
And how did Ford Fest do for you? Being your first year out, it seems...
No, it was big. It was
seemed
like,
big.
It was really good. And we partnered with the NMRA during their World Ford Finals. So it's already a huge drag race. And then we brought in drifting and autocrossing and a dyno and an Australian-style burnout contest and just a lot of chaos. And everybody just had a great time. It was just the mood in the air was electric, and everybody appreciated Holly for throwing this party, which is what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right? And we were hoping that they would appreciate us and not see us as crashing their NMRA race. And the exact opposite happened, man. They were all just, thank you for bringing this to another level. And I can't believe you got the number one Bigfoot truck here. Like, we had the first Bigfoot ever there.
Yeah.
It's still running, and we paraded it. Actually, me and my kids were riding in the back of Bigfoot across the oval track at Beach Bend while Von Gittin Jr. and Chelsea DeNofa drifted around us. So picture Bigfoot cruising across this old truck from the 70s with a current Mustang smoking, just doing donuts around it.
And
I was in the back of it.
And so I bet you were a hero to your kids for that one.
Yeah, I said, best day ever. And then I thought about it. I was like, well, except for when you were born and when you were born and when I married your mom. But other than that, this is the best day ever.
Yeah, and pretty much you had to say those things. Yeah, that's all right. But so you got some new Ford parts. Tell us about what's new for you guys.
Our EFI side, Holly EFI has been just doing amazing over the last decade. We've revamped our ECU. Always been in the fuel injection business for the aftermarket for a long time, but about 10 years ago, we made it super intuitive. That software is easy to understand and find your way around, and then the computer is so fast, and the feedback, the loop that it gets from all the sensors, it adjusts so fast that it can self-learn.
Yeah.
So literally, you just start driving and this thing starts learning, and you don't have to build a fuel map and, you know, program a number into each cell and all that. It just does it for you. It's been a great product. So we now, we're trying to, you know, the goal is to make it easy for a guy to get a kit, the wiring harness he needs, the computer he needs, and bolt it onto his car. And so just a couple months ago, we came out with a Ford specific kit.
Okay.
For the early 302,
like all the Fox body Mustangs.
Perfect
and
for
stuff.
The Fox body. We've even got a kit with an extended harness, so the computer can fit under the seat of your Fox body. It's all ready for you to go.
I saw that. It looked like,
and it's a great price.
And you have the brackets and stuff for you. You pop out the driver's seat. The ECU has brackets that bolt into the seat holes, basically. And you bolt your seat back in, and it mounts an ECU underneath there.
Yep.
Now, from there, do you replace the entire engine harness and mass air in the Fox body, or does the computer plug into the existing stuff? Like, how far do you have to go into the engine and the harness?
I mean, it's a standalone unit.
Okay, so you would do the engine harness.
Yeah, you just do the engine harness, and the rest of your car just runs off the original harness.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And then
and the price is about $1,000. So, you know, for a Terminator X kit is what we call it. And so the value for a computer that you can tune your race car with a laptop.
Yeah.
Change a cam, tune it again right there with the Holly. You don't have to send your computer out, get it flashed, send it back. Hope you got a good tune, you know, over and over. Every time you make a modification to your engine, the Holly just adapts to it.
Yeah. I saw some new intake manifolds as well. And it looks like you even have just the old school 5-liter Mustang.
Yep. Well, that was one of our high RAM was super popular with changeable tops. And so we did one for the 8.2 deck Ford. And it's been popular already. And you can change the tops. And we have a side mount throttle body top. And of course, you can use the traditional front mount high RAM. Put two carburetors on it if you want or whatever. So, and we even have like a universal blank top for whatever you got in your head that you want to do.
Right. And the idea of having the top be able to come off, you can get creative if you wanted to build some sort of like intercooler system.
Yep.
Like
that happens a lot with the high RAM.
Why not be able to go in there and do that? Do something that's sort of low profile. The complication with doing a sort of the tunnel RAM front throttle body on these on the Ford motors was the distributor being in the way.
Yeah.
And I saw, I believe, at Ford Fest that you guys have a coil-on-plug conversion, and when you do that, you can do a flat top on the distributor, right?
Yep. It's a lower-profile distributor, so the top of the high RAM clears it.
So there's a coil and plug conversion for the Fords. Is that what you guys have?
So our I'm not sure on the Fords. We have a distributor, a low profile distributor.
Yeah.
That gets it down underneath the top of the high RAM manifold. So it gives you the clearance that you need without your plug wires running up into the
So if you're building something custom as well, some turbo motor or something like that,
right?
You can have that front facing throttle body and honestly you. Other than noticing the distributors in the front instead of the back, it very much looks like the LS manifolds that you guys have. You'd open the hood and you would think...
Yeah, it looks like the traditional high RAM that people come... I mean, we did it for the LS first, so people associate it with the LS, but I mean, it is just, it's just a manifold to us. So, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
So what else is new for you guys that you're working on? Because there's so many different brands and so many different companies. There's got to be thousands and thousands of products in the catalog now.
Literally, like, we have 3 to 5 new parts every day. And anybody can go to holley.com and look at the homepage. If you scroll down, there's a waterfall of new products that changes every day. Whatever new parts we bring out, they're there constantly scrolling and adding to them every day. So that's the place to go. And you can see, you can get to all 31 brands from holley.com.
Okay.
Just go, just hit the brand 31 button.
31 brands.
Yep.
Man.
It's like Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah.
Except it's 31 flavors. Yep. It's 31 brands.
31 brands.
I haven't thought of that until just now. That's pretty funny.
You guys are working on the marketing plan for this forever.
Strawberry, MSD, plug wires.
Yeah. The other thing that I noticed in the Holley catalog, if you guys haven't gone through the website in a while, is almost everything that you guys offer, especially all the cast pieces, the manifolds and everything, and now even the electronics, there's different colors and different versions of everything. You want powder-coated black stuff. You want, you know, the natural silver. You can get pretty much, you know, you can get a different couple different looks if you want, you know, kind of match.
I mean, you know, we
your theme.
Yep. So a lot of black, a lot of standard cast aluminum, you know, silver color, polished and different depending on the product, you know. Got a lot of new valve covers that we do in Chevy orange or red, or, you know, a lot of variety of colors there. Our sniper, we got a stealth sniper,
okay,
which is your throttle body that replaces your carburetor. And so we came out with one that's here at the show that looks like a Holley 4150 carburetor. So it's got the two bowls out on the ends and the main body, and it looks just like a standard Holley. But we got a computer built onto the side of it, so it's an easy to mount. You don't have to have a separate ECU mounted somewhere else in the car.
Okay.
It's just right there on the throttle body.
All in one unit.
Yep. So I'm actually really excited about that. I've been waiting on that one for a little while because I'm going to
put
it on my car.
Throttle linkage, transmission kickdown.
Yep, just like a carburetor.
Work up
yep.
the same.
Yep.
And then you just got to run what? The power, ignition,
power in the ground. Yeah,
you got to upgrade a fuel pump.
You have to have a fuel pump. You have to have a high pressure pump. And it's always best if you can put it in the tank.
Yeah.
Just keeps the pump cooler. And we've got solutions for that. We have a lot of tanks that come with pumps. But if we don't have one for your particular car, we have a universal drop-in. And you just cut a hole in your existing tank. And then it just drops in the hole. And it has these, I'll kind of explain it like a wing out. It kind of wings out underneath the hole you cut. And then it just sandwiches. You just start tightening down the bolt. And it sandwiches it down with a big thick gasket onto the top of your fuel tank. So now you have a pump in your tank. And
so you can
adjust the height
so you can, however deep the tank is.
It goes from, I think it's like 5 to 12 inches is the room.
Okay.
That, you know, that's the dimensions it'll go, the shortest to the tallest. And you want the pump, you want the pickup laying on the bottom of your tank. So basically you want it to barely touch the bottom of your tank. So
you
it's picking up fuel.
Pull that tank down, or even just buy an aftermarket version of your tank.
Yeah.
And then you can cut the hole. You can measure how far you need to go
in.
You
just
measure
it.
Can, of course, clean it, blow it all out, and then reinstall it, and you're good to go.
Yeah, you never want shavings in your fuel tank.
No, definitely got to clean it all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could drill the hole upside down. That might help a little
bit. Help a little. I still rinse it.
Yeah, you don't want it in there, but I guess that's why you got multiple filters on that thing, just in case you don't get it all. Well, the booth here looks great. The cars look great. I see you got our
friends,
the Ring Brothers. You got one of their rides in here.
We got their Mustang that they debuted yesterday, and it's got a Holley. They typically use Holley EFI on everything.
Yeah.
And our Flowmaster exhaust. But for this car, the owner wanted a carburetor, so it ended up with a Holley carburetor. And it's a killer Mustang.
Yeah, he wanted to save a few bucks.
I don't know what to do. I think it's just part of that style, you know.
Huge check over the Ring Brothers. Go, hey, don't go crazy.
I'm at the end of my budget, so I'm gonna have to go with a carburetor.
We're really tapped out here. Just go with the carburetor.
I think it's just a styling thing. You know, he wanted it to be old school. The car looks like an old school Trans Am style.
Well,
build.
Maybe he didn't know about your sniper.
Oh, I'm sure they told him all about it.
And say, hey, it looks exactly the same. Yeah.
Well, actually, probably didn't have that when he picked that carburetor.
Doing it. You can sell one by the end of the day.
We'll just get him converted before he leaves the booth.
Actually, on that sniper kit, do you run? You also run an O2 sensor down there.
It comes with an O2 sensor.
you put a, and we have, put a bung in the...
Yep, you can weld in a bung, or the kit comes with a clamp on.
Yeah.
So you drill one hole in your exhaust, and it's we got these cool little plates, basically, that hug the exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
And we have stainless clamps that and a gasket that seals it all up, and you don't have to take your pipe out, weld it. You just get a drill and put it on.
Easy enough.
I've even done it. I'm a marketing guy. I installed one on my brother-in-law's car, and the thing just ran. I followed the Holly instructional video on our YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, this is how we do it.
Yeah, yeah. So I literally didn't read the instructions. I wanted to see how good our video was, and we would pause the video and work on that part of the car, get it done, and hit play, and then go watch the next part.
Yeah.
And do that part. And we probably watched it three times, but you know, yeah, all total. But we were able to put it on, and I'm a knucklehead marketing guy. I'm not a mechanic at all. And my brother-in-law is not either. And so he's a woodworker.
Yeah.
But the two of us managed to do it, and it fired up just like we said it would. And literally it was running almost as smooth the first mile as it does now. It was like it learns that fast and
the
self-corrects.
Tuning is good, right?
It just self-corrects, yeah. And it reads the O2 and does its thing.
It self-tunes even if you've got a cam or a little better heads,
yep,
pretty much anything on there.
Yep.
Does it self-tune with boost if you had a supercharger or something on it? Or you got to do a little, you know, there's probably a map sensor and then up to a certain,
yeah,
you know,
well, we have boost,
a one bar.
We have boost-ready kits that come, and a little more, that, of course, an engine with boost is a little more radical, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's pretty self-sufficient.
Probably get it running, then you can take it to your tuner and fine-tune it.
Most people can do it themselves, and it does a great job of kind of helping you tune itself. So, that's a really popular unit, too.
Yeah.
And now we even have 2x4 snipers. We've told people since the get-go we were going to have them, and it took us a couple years, but now we have, you know, a front. You can have two throttle bodies for that old-school look and mount them front to back, and... It has one computer, and the other one's just a air valve, basically. And finally got that on the shelf, so we're excited about that.
Yeah, it's a good look.
Yep.
Awesome, man. Well, Bill, thank you so much. I'm going to let you get back to it.
Thanks for what you do.
And I appreciate the time.
Cool. And I appreciate you having me.
Check out holly.com.
Yep, place to be.
Well, that's the SEMA show. Hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.